Thank you for the invitation, in particular to Professor Carli. And okay, some things about the date is wrong because I have some problems with the macro files, and I was not able to run the LaTeX file here in the United States, so it's my fault, of course, but please forgive. And let's start with the introduction, with an introduction of this talk, which is mostly about black hole solutions, and in some sense very little about nuclear geometry. So I've seen that you have already seen for my talk something, and also about the applications to black hole physics. And in particular, to most of you, this talk will appear more or less a general relativistic talk. And okay, let me give some introduction. This is the outline. I will talk about a new solution which is inspired somehow by the presence of non-commutative in the space-time, and is supposed to replace the Schwarzschild solution. Then some comments about the charged case, and finally some applications till now only of the neutral Schwarzschild-like case to the extra-dimensional scenario, and some comments about the possibility, okay, the role of non-commutativity versus the existence of remnants in the LHC experiment, black hole remnants, of course. So let me briefly introduce some words about black holes, which very often are thought as some kind of privileged laboratory for the study of quantum gravitational effects. And indeed, such quantum effects are expected only in the case when we have small black holes, not in the case of astrophysical black holes, which are larger than the solar mass. And of course, the second very more important point is whether quantum effects can say something about what is the behavior of gravity near the origin, and where we have a classical singularity, and somehow we don't have the correct information about the physics from this classical background. Indeed, the current status of the study of black hole, considering not only the quantization of the outside matter sector, but also of the geometrical sector, the current status is let's say inside of is provided by string theory as a candidate theory for the quantization of gravity, and but only for a few cases we are able to say something about the global quantum nature of these objects. As an alternative way, there is the possibility of studying such effects, such quantum effects, at least in some region, by means of effective theories, which we hopefully are able to provide reliable predictions of what indeed happens in the previous cases, in particular in the vicinity of the space-time singularity. And okay, as you may imagine, the effective theory will be inspired somehow by non-commutative geometry. Quantum gravity, everybody knows, is affected by the presence of a sort of minimal length in space-time. This length is tiny, but of course at extreme energies where quantum effects are relevant, also this the conventional nature of junk that we have is somehow has a breakdown and must take into account the presence of such a minimal length. And a way to model the presence of a minimal length is to consider a non-commutative relation among coordinate operators. And this is more or less the idea, the underlying idea of every kind of non-commutative geometric approach to field theory and gravity. In other ways, in some sense, we would like to mimic quantum mechanics and to exploit the uncertainty principle, which conventionally is seen as sort of a limitation of the theory. And while here could be a good, let's say, tool to introduce a sort of a lack of resolution in the space-time, and therefore the presence of a minimal length. And you can see that here this theta mu matrix is an anti-symmetric matrix with the dimensions of a length squared. And indeed, theta plays the same role of h bar in the conventional QP commutators, non-commutators, if you want, QP brackets of quantum mechanics, and thus, in some sense, it determines the fundamental cell of discretization of our space-time. So these are basic facts, if you want, but to work with a sort of effective theory based on this, let's say, starting point, we must answer the following question: what is the non-commutative quantum counterpartner of general relativity? The problem is that we don't know till now a full, complete answer. And what we can do, and what we know for sure, is that the corrections of the non-commutative corrections to the Einstein-Hilbert action are the second order in the parameters provided by the matrix theta mu, while the Machter sector is affected at the leading order in such parameters. So the best that we can do is to study somehow the field equations are modified by the presence of such terms. And of course, the first step is to study the leading order. And thus, what we expect is that at such order, the Einstein tensor is formally left unchanged, while corrections enter only the matter sector, in particular with the modification of the source. And such modification is what we would like to have. You know, in some sense, we would like to have a sort of smearing of all, let's say, point-like objects in our space-time, because since the beginning we have assumed the presence of a sort of those non-commutative brackets, and thus such a smearing will be, in some sense, on the length scale of the square root of the parameters entering the theta mu matrix. Now, for those that are, let's say, very interested on the technical side of this talk, I could provide some, let's say, supporting papers, but the subject will be mostly about the outcome, the physical outcome regarding the black hole physics, and then I will give you only the result that could be somehow, in some sense, could seem obvious. And the conventional way of talking about the Schwarzschild solution is that we have a sort of vacuum solution of Einstein equation. But if you are, let's say, if you pay more attention, we could say that indeed this solution is originated by a Dirac delta distribution. And if indeed we employ those non-commutative coordinates, what we have is that a sort of replacement of Dirac delta distribution in favor of a Gaussian distribution. And here we are in the spherical symmetric case, and thus there is a unique theta parameter. And at first sight, you can see that the commutative limit is easily obtained. So if you would like to have the Dirac delta, which the conventional distribution, we can only we simply can let theta go to zero, and this distribution indeed is goes to the Dirac delta. Then this is in somehow the starting point, and okay, there are some comments about the properties of this solution. Indeed, this source, the mass indeed is diffused throughout a region of linear size, which is given by the square root of theta as expected. It's still a static and spherical symmetric source there. And okay, this is only the beginning, but to solve the Einstein equations, we have to ask for additional conditions. One is the first one is very important, is a covariant conservation of the energy momentum tensor. Everything that I'm telling you now is at the frontier between the so-called classical and quantum formalism, quantum geometrical formalism, because indeed I'm employing some sort of quasi-classical coordinates, and but the procedure is now conventional to the classical way of solving Einstein equations, because indeed we have for the employment of these coordinates an effective smearing of the matter source only at this leading order, at the leading order. And an additional condition is let's say to have.
Can I just quickly ask the g theta is that what does that refer to? G superscript theta.
You have two different thetas here.
Ah, very sorry. This is the angular component.
Okay.
Y theta is yes. Very yes.
Okay.
You are right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes, it's a matter of notation.
All right.
Well, this condition is, let's say, a condition that we would like to have for the case in which, non-commutativity is expected as to be important near the origin, because, of course, the Gaussian distribution for large distances is rather is exponentially suppressed, and then you have indeed the vacuum solution. And then to have a Schwarzschild-like behavior, because at a large distance I want to have, I would like to have the Schwarzschild behavior. And this condition is simply the Schwarzschild-like condition, because for the Schwarzschild solution we do have this.
Well, I have a question about this, which actually I was going to ask earlier, but this is a good place for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're assuming now that your R is the Schwarzschild radial coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
Why not, say, the isotropic radial coordinate? or the harmonic radial coordinate.
Okay, this is the way I have solid solutions indeed. But in principle, you can do the game also with other coordinates. I don't think this is a...
Well, I mean, in your derivation of the stress energy tension, you had an R in there. How do you know which R it is?
I know because this is more or less the procedure you follow when you solve a fluid solution. Think of cosmological solution. But in that case, you don't have the energy distribution, and here we have. So it's at the end you will see that the procedure is very similar to the case of a cosmological solution in which you have to solve the TOV equation and so on. So I'm employing the so-called commoving coordinates system here, in some sense.
Well, maybe we should talk more about this later.
Okay. From that condition, one very simply obtain a condition for TRR, the TRR component of the energy momentum tensor, and by the Einstein equations, one also obtain the form of the tangential pressure, and you can see that the radial pressure is indeed just the opposite of the up to constants that in this in the geometrical units are equal to one, while the tangential pressure is a little bit different from the radial pressure. So for this reason, physically, we have a sort of anisotropic fluid, because for the conventional isotropic fluid, I would expect to have all pressure terms equal among each other, while here we have a different value from the radial of the radial pressure and of the angular pressures. This is, let's say, our energy momentum tensor, and we can finally get the line element, the solving line element, and the solution is the following, where here gamma, this is the lower incomplete gamma function, it's a function, or to have an idea what kind of solution we have, it's important to check immediately the commutative limit, and this would mean to replace this value with infinite, and immediately you have the gamma Euler gamma function of 3 on 2, and this is this function is known as to be equal to the square root of pi over 2. Then if we replace this value here, there is a simplification of this 4 with 2 and the square root of pi with square root of pi, and either you have the Schwarzschild element. So in some sense, the commutative limit works, and this corresponds to see the source at a large distance. Nice feature would appear studying the horizons in this case, because it's non-trivial how what kind of horizons we have, and in particular, I would. I have to tell you that this m, this mass parameter, is a constant free parameter. So according to the value of m, we can have different cases. Indeed, for the case in which this is the study of a GR at minus 1 as a function of R, the intersection with the x-axis will be would give the horizons, and indeed for M sufficiently large, we do have two horizons, and for the case in which M is somehow little, we don't have any horizon, and there is of course the borderline case. There is a unique horizon for this value of mass 1.9 and this value of radius. And please keep in mind that these values, because these values will be important when we will study the temperature of this object. And in particular here, so from you can compute the Hawking temperature of this object, and this is written in terms of the event horizon radius, and this term is indeed the Hawking result, and while non-commutative corrections are due of this term, you can see that they are exponentially suppressed, and in fact for large distances indeed we have only the Hawking contribution. While this object could be important when we are, let's say, at a scale of distance comparable with the square root of theta, and indeed instead of having a divergent behavior, we have that non-commutativity reaches in some sense one of its fundamental goal, thus to cure singularities. Indeed the temperature reaches a maximum which corresponds to such values of m and radius. And after that, instead of divergent behavior, there is a cooling down of the black hole to an absolute zero configuration, which correspond to those to value of horizon radius and mass that we have already seen in the case when we have studied the horizons. We have found that there exists an extremal case with a unique horizon. And indeed, again, in the same fashion of what we have already seen, when R is smaller than the radius of this final state black hole configuration, we do not have any black hole. Okay, this is the plot of the Hawking radiation, and this is the corresponding corrected non-commutative corrected case. You can see that here there is a the behavior is equivalent, while there is a maximum, then a cooling down, and in this region indeed we don't have any black hole. One important aspect is the study of the Bieck reaction of this object, namely the modification of the geometry due to the quantum emission of radiation. Conventionally, such effect is important for the Schwarzschild case, the final stage of evaporation, where the temperature diverges. Why here, indeed, we have a cooling down and of the black hole, and then a suppression of back reaction is expected, even if it could be also important only when the temperature reaches the maximum. And to this purpose, it's important to compute to make a comparison between the thermal energy emitted by the black hole at the maximum and the mass of the black hole itself. So if we compare these two quantities, the maximal thermal energy emitted and the mass of the black hole, to have a significant back reaction, such quantities must be of the same order. This leads to a condition for the value of the square root of theta, which is which it tells us that we can keep such a solution, because of this value is quite tiny, so not less than the Planck length. And then, so we can say that for a reasonable value of theta, we don't have any back reaction from this object.
So this thing gets a positive specific heat.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, conventionally you have a negative specific heat everywhere here, because emitting radiation, the black hole shrinks towards the origin, and then the temperature increases. But here in this region, you can it has been calculated indeed. The specific heat changes.
Very
side.
Ungravitational.
Ungravitational, you mean in the sense that every gravitational object should have, but this is still classically, because indeed also if you study at Newtonian level, you can see that Newtonian potential
right.
is has this behavior, but indeed we don't know what happens at the origin. In this framework, we know. Again, let's according to what we are, you told me, the important aspect is the study of the physics near the origin, and we found that the curvature singularity is cured, and here is the Ricci scalar, and you can see that this is finite, and okay, the value is given by in terms of. Theta that acts like a sort of cutoff. And another comment is the fact that this the curvature is constant and positive, and this is we have indeed a sort of De Sitter core at the origin, and this is in full agreement to some previous solution in the 90s from Frolov, Mukhanov, and Markov, in which they try to solve Einstein equation with some matching condition of the outer Schwarzschild solution with the inner De Sitter core. And here we don't have any matching condition between the two geometries, because the parameter theta provides the continuous transition between such geometries. So this is, in some sense, similar to what found by Frolov and co-workers, but automatically done by this parameter theta.
So some reason, I don't know too much about this subject, some reason that you expect the De Sitter to be the right geometry?
It's regular, so that's
it's just
a
regular,
yeah, very
regular
good fact power. Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And for the case in which you don't have a black hole for masses smaller than the M0, instead of having an X singularity, we have an everywhere regular geometry. And this, in some sense, looks like that very debated model of Gravel stars. And even if I would say mean here, because we have an upper bound for the mass, and so this object occurs only when we have a mass smaller than the mass N0. While for large masses is roughly to say, equivalent to say large distances, and indeed we have that the inner horizon goes to the origin, while the outer one goes to the conventional value provided by Schwarzschild.
Sorry, what type of horizon is the inner one?
Which is, I'm sorry.
Is it
event horizon?
not a blue shift, not like a Cauchy horizon or an infinite blue shift, because then I would
not trust the solution.
Not
infinite redshift surfaces, but in horizon indeed.
Okay.
Because we have the change of the sign, so indeed time-like geodesics goes into the space-like and so on. This is also in support of the stability of the core.
So if you
time-like
go to
space-like direction switch, but time-like geodesics have to stay time-like geodesics.
Now, if you go to something like Kruskal coordinates, if you define regular coordinates at the inner horizon, is this inner horizon null? Is it null? Is it light-like?
Oh, indeed, I have to redo that thing in terms of the Kruskal coordinates. But yes, also depends on Pernell's diagram should be done. So
right.
Also, anyway, I expect to have a space of Pernell's diagram, more or less the Schwarzschild case with the Sitter diagram instead of the singularity. And to your question, yes, I believe that yes. Anyway, we have just published such things, so part of the work to be done. So I have only, let's say, beliefs, not the technical proofs yet. Anyway, so. May I go on with the same case, same procedure for the charged case, and here you have the Einstein-Maxwell system in which again there is a smearing due to the presence of non-commutativity of all sources, and both for Maxwell equation and the Einstein equation. And indeed here the angular momentum tensor is due to there are two terms. One is the neutral one we have already seen, the other is that of the electromagnetic field, formally the same, because the smearing enter indeed at the level of Maxwell equation, and what one has to do is to define a point-like charge in this framework, and it turns out to be again a Gaussian distributed charge, and from this distribution we have the solution for the electric field, and then for the F mu. Then, if one plug everything into the system, we could we solve the system, and the solution is the following. Okay, this is more or less what we have already seen for the Schwarzschild neutral case. The presence of the charge gives you this term. Here the mass is the total mass fed by an external observed due to the flux of the energy momentum tensor. And F is a function which depends in a less trivial way on gammas, and here gammas are of 1 on 2 before we have of 3 halves. And okay, to grasp the physical meaning of this object is convenient to study both the asymptotic and the origin behavior, and for the particular behavior of electromagnetic fields we have that for that small r, that function goes with the sixth power of r, and then the geometry is found to be again regular, but the contribution is here is given only on the bare mass, while at a larger distances one again find as a one aspect to find the usual Riesz-Nostrom line element. So in some sense the goal is obtained at a larger distance. We have the conventional result. At the origin we have a regular geometry. So this is the study of the horizons. This surface is G not not as a function of the radius and of the mass, because here we have two parameters, and we for a given value of the charge, here is Q equal to 1 in suitable units, and of course if you study the intersection with the plane G not not equal to 0, such intersections will give you the for a given value of the mass. We can go up here and then proceed there. This is the first intersection, and this gives you the first radius, horizon radius. And then you can proceed again and find the second horizon radius. And there is, of course, the borderline case in which there is a unique horizon starting from a certain value of the mass. So you can find these two coincident solutions if you want, and then a unique radius, and in this region again we don't have any black hole, and then for we used to call that in this case in this region we have non-extremal black holes. Here there is the extremal one, and again no horizon in this region we call over charge and massive droplets, because they are quite regular. Okay, this is simply a summary of the fact that I have already told you, and this is the same plot seen from another point of view, and these are the curves depending on different value of the mass. Let's go to study again the thermodynamical behavior of this object, and this is the Hawking temperature. Such temperature is simply the okay. This is the Hawking result. This is the correction to the neutral case, and this is the correction due to the presence of the charge. And you can see that for this minus, will have okay again a regular behavior. But the effect of the charge is just to lower the maximum of the temperature. And this is the plot of the neutral case. Temperature is a function of the outer horizon radius. And switching on some values of the charge, you can see that there are the temperature decreases in some sense. Now some comments about the pair production due to the presence of extreme fields. Indeed, everybody knows about a quantum vacuum and what happens to virtual pairs of particles and antiparticles when there is an external field. Some of such particles could become real, and the production probability is given by this formula, where work is the work done by the field, G is the charge, and this is the quantum length of the particle, and while the prefactor depends on the field, and beta is a very dimensional constant. for the opt-in case, we can, let's say, write this formula, knowing that the mass is our charge, yeah? And the field is given by the surface gravity, and okay, again, the length. We can rewrite this in terms of the expression of the Hawking temperature in terms of the surface gravity. This is why Kb is the Boltzmann constant. But for the charge case, indeed, we have two channels, if you want to, because there is also the electric field, and so also the Schwinger effect might be important. The Schwinger formula is the following, where the charge is of the electric charge and the field is the electric field. The question is what is the role played by the Schwinger effect versus the Hawking effect? So how the black hole produces particles, radiation if you want. And you can see that if we study the value of the electric field at the horizon for this black hole, and we compare this value with the critical field, namely the field that we need to have a significant Schwinger effect. This field is obtained very simply here from this relation. And so the field at the horizon is always over critical, because the condition to have, let's say, a field larger than the critical field is that the charge, we need only one elementary charge, because Z is simply the number of elementary charges. So for Z larger than 1 or equal to 1, we have an overcritical field at the horizon. Thus means that there is always a Schwinger production. In other words, we can say that the radius of the diadosphere is always larger with respect to the square root of theta. The diadosphere is the surface, the geometrical surface in which which the electric field is overcritical, so when it is possible to produce particles, pairs, by Schwinger effect. And in some sense, we can say that the Schwinger effect dominates the Hawking effect till a neutral phase, and from that point ahead, we have only the Hawking case described by the neutral line element. So, some. This is the summary of what I told you. The commutativity introduces modification of the matter source only, at least at the leading order. We have found new solution for the static spherical symmetric case, describing a self-gravitating droplet, one is droplet fluid, with the sitter core at the origin, and one, two, or no horizon, also for the neutral non-rotating case. The singular behavior of the Hawking temperature is cured. There exists a zero temperature final state. The quantum back reaction is not important. We have found a Rison-Nostrom-like metric with a regular sitter core at the origin. And Schwinger pair production dominates the early stages while the Hawking radiation determines the final stage of the black hole. This, what I told you, could be, let's say, important, I don't know, but much more interest is about what we could say about in the case of hadronic collisions. The production of black holes is expected since, in presence of extra dimensions, the fundamental scale is roughly the TeV, and very recently a solution of the extra-dimensional scenario was studied, assuming again this non-commutative setting. Thus, the resulting distribution is again a Gaussian, where n is the number of extra dimensions. And okay, this is the solution, which looks like the four-dimensional case for the presence of gammas. The only novelty is regards the fundamental scales, these three factors here. The fundamental scales scale occur is related to the Planck scale by means of the extra dimensional volume. And the properties of this solution at the thermodynamical level are equivalent to what we have found in the four-dimensional case. And in particular, it's important to say that there exists a minimal mass below which we cannot have any black hole. And that as final stage of the evaporation, we have a zero temperature remnant. Thus, the presence of remnant could be, let's say, if detected, a sort of signature of this model. And for n larger than 2 extra dimension, we know that the fundamental scale is quite reachable by present accelerators. And rewriting everything in terms of adimensional quantities, so we can see that the mass of the remnant is indeed accessible to current accelerators. And also the black hole production, the black hole remnants production as cross-section has been computed, and it turns out to be proportional to the R0 squared. And again, everything is at the scales of TeV. So this is the extra dimensional case is quite promising in some sense. And because hadrons carry charge, the next step is to study how the charge is distributed among the hadronic fragments. And so the extra-dimensional charge case is the next step of our study. But the problem, if you want, is that hadrons carry also spin. And thus, should be vital to study also the Kerr-like solution, but this is, believe me, a very, very difficult problem. So we don't know if it will be possible to obtain it. Anyway, let me finally give you some references. This is about non-commutative gravity approaches to non-commutative approaches to gravity and the Einstein equations. Let's say the references, and this is these are some references regarding the first attempt of implementing non-commutativity in black hole physics. This is the solution, the Schwarzschild-like solution, the charge solution, and finally the non-commutative black hole in extra-dimensional scenario. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
So, so I'm sorry I missed the beginning, but what sets the scale for the sidereal?
Yeah, the scale is provided by the square root of theta, indeed. So, but in this framework, that scale is square root of theta is a free parameter. So.
So the LHC production is...
Yes, what we expect is, in some sense, if you have the two hadrons colliding, and the transverse distribution of the moment should be, in some sense, changed by the presence of the remnant. And so, because
you
don't see...
You can turn that off by adjusting theta, so...
Sorry?
So the idea that you can see this in LHC is completely controlled by theta?
Yeah.
And you can turn it on or off depending on...
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, you can
but
also.
It's possible, so you're saying.
You, from this distribution of momenta, in some sense, you could have an idea of what is the mass of the remnant, and the mass of the remnant is related with the square root of theta.
Right.
And then experimentally, you could
understand.
Yeah.
So can you use this to accelerate the universe? Found a solution.
Yes, but the fluid is not cosmological there. Applying to the initial singularity and other stuff, maybe possible, but
that's a whole other kind of solution.
So
we just don't know either way at this point. I thought I saw Steve shaking his head. I'm wondering if he has a reason.
We know that theta has to, observationally, we know that theta has to be pretty small. Because otherwise you get problems just in ordinary high-energy physics.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think...
It would have to be too big.
Yeah, I mean, this is... You get deviations from general relativity on some scale that's set by theta, which has to be experimentally like 10 to the minus 20 meters, something like that.
I've tried to compute, let's say, the square root of theta from other cases. One is comparing, when possible, the value of the vacuum energy and plug it into the equation and compare it with the cosmological constant. But we know for sure that with a unique parameter, you are not able to obtain the experimental value. So I will try the same game with the extra dimensional scenario. Perhaps with N, it will be possible. The other possibility is in the framework of electrodynamics, take a G minus 2 and compute some sense, even if the space time is flat, it may fluctuate. And in that framework, you have that the theoretical predictions and the experimental data are in a very good agreement. So, also small deviation could be, let's say, could give you some indication about the value of theta. Another possibility is to study the binary pulsar, which is the most, let's say, precise prediction of every physical theory given by general relativity, and then the emission of gravitational waves. The pier is affected by short deviation provided by general relativity. But these are only ideas. For the case of the G minus 2, I tried, and it's very complicated because you need to study the stability of the theory versus the randomization group. Because of theta, you have to study the theory where the parameter, where there is a fixed point of the parameter. Because you have to. There are some non-trivial terms that come out, so it's a problem.
Yeah, I had a question. When you differentiated between the Schwinger and the Hawking temperature, when you did that, is...
No, Schwinger, pay production. No, not
sorry?
Pay production, you mean.
Yeah. When you did that, does the Hawking effect, like when I do just classical GR with a charge priced to Nordstrom black hole, doesn't the Hawking effect take pair production into account?
Okay. For the moment, everything here is, let's say, the non-commutativity is in the geometry, if you want.
Right.
You don't have non-commutativity in the matter sector. Because you could have the presence of theta, both in the matter sector, if you want, in the external field, in the which I describe, let's say, quantum vacuum, and in the geometry. And this was done in a paper of mine, in which there are both theta in both cases, and vacuum parallelization has been computed by only the 2D dimensional case, deriving the quantum stress tensor by the non-commutative version of the Polya correction. And because we have, let's say, also computed the correction of the Polya correction. For what you are telling me that there is a possibility to have the non-commutative Schwinger effect in the flat space and then to study it into the curved background space-time, that this is a fact that I would like to study. One of the other points that I would like to do. So it's probably I expect to have a different fit kernel and so deviations.
So I'm still interested in Andy's question because I didn't understand the answer. Without extra dimensions, I mean, you have some constraint from non-observational and effects in general relativity. What, if you put that back in, what does it say about the LHC possibility of seeing anything?
The problem in 4D and scale is too far. So
right, okay. So in other words, okay, so that's the answer, that if without the extra dimensions, LHC would see nothing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you understood
that
answer.
No, I'm glad you asked that question.
That's what I thought the answer was, but I wasn't sure. So it'd be the standard thing. You'd have to go to the extra dimensions to reduce the scale of all this. And
this is the fact that is common to all the TV gravity field, and not on what I have done. So
I assume that was sort of what
the starting point is to have extra
dimensions.
Just curious, you mentioned that you weren't sure you were going to be able to extend the solution to the Kerr solution. What are the problems? Or have you looked at that?
The extend solution?
Extend to the Kerr solution, the rotating
bipole. Okay.
Yeah.
The problem is how to write down the correct energy momentum tensor, because you know for sure that, take every textbook of general relativity, this is the vacuum solution of Einstein equation for the rotating case, but this is not what we would like to have. We would like to see how conventionally is this solution is generated by a Dirac delta in some sort of coordinates, and the coordinates in the Kerr case are horrible. Yes, there are. If you look at the book given by Chandrasekhar, I think there are 10 pages of change of coordinates, so something like that. And so you have to write to understand how to smear the Dirac delta in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
And this is equivalent to say, how can I write correctly the T union?
So, I mean, normally you have to, theta gives a directionality, and you have to choose whether it's, a magnetic kind of theta or an electric kind of theta, so it sets up a preferred coordinate system. Nonetheless, you're able to write. You're able to write down what looks like a totally spherically symmetric solution. How does that happen? I guess.
Yes, this is this happens when you employ the coherent state approach to non-commutative geometry.
So could you say that one more time? I didn't quite hear. Just repeat the last sentence.
This happens when you employ the coherent state approach to non-commutative geometry. It's an effective approach which is based mostly the Moyal approach is very common. It's more or less. I don't want to talk about it. But what I have employed is this other possibility, the coherent state approach, that looks like it mimics what happens in quantum optics. There is a paper by Glober in which he employed the coherent states in quantum optics. Coherent states have the property of being the states of a minimal resolution. In that case, in the global case, it's the resolution over the phase space, open brackets, open commas, inverted commas.
Are you saying quantum quantum superposition of all the different directions?
No, but yes.
Seems like too simple a question to have such a complicated answer.
Yeah, but very simply, it depends. You can write the Dirac data in general coordinates, and this can be done again with the Gaussian, and then when you change into the radial coordinates, you have that form. That's all.
But why is it smeared? Let me try a different way of getting at this. Why is it smeared only in the radial direction and
because
in the angular directions?
Because it depends on the magnitude of the position vector, the square of the magnitude of the position vector.
I mean, is there some place where the directionality choice for theta mu mu would rear its head as a second order perturbation or something like that? I mean, you're saying that somehow the first effect of this non-commutativity is to just smear everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what you're saying. But then, at some level, the particular directionality choice of the preferred coordinate system should rear its head. Where would that happen?
Perhaps further levels, say, the theta mu parameters. The first, the leading order, you have only that smoothing. And it's everything behaves with a spherical symmetric.
So it's as though this.
No, it's a preferred.
So somehow it's the theta acts as a seed for the smearing. That's the first order effect, and in some sense, and but doesn't impart its directionality at that level. Is that what you're saying? Or?
No. You must be making some assumption about what kind of non-commutativity you're assuming.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if I just assume, let me choose a direction x and to
mm-hmm.
have a geometry where x and t don't commute, but y and z commute with everything,
mm-hmm.
then the smearing is only going to be in the x plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not in the y or z. So what assumption are you making that gives you equal smearing in all three spatial directions?
There are a lot of them, because to support that smearing, there are at least two papers. But very, very briefly, if you want to have a field theory written on such coordinates, non-commutative coordinates, if you require the unitarity of the theory, and okay. Also, I do believe in the Lorentz conservation. And and if you want to have a finite, UV finite theory, then the outcome is that there is no preferred direction. If you prefer one direction, you have a Lorentz breaking and a unitarity are connected. If you breaks, there is a Lorentz breaking, also
yeah.
the unitarity is lost.
Right. In
okay.
fact, that's the conventional answer: is that Lorentz
yes.
symmetry is violated because you have to choose a direction for theta. So,
but in
somehow
this case,
you avoided that, and that's what I don't understand.
But
are you saying you don't have to choose a preferred coordinate system for this theta?
No, theta in this case is a tensor. Theta mu mu is a tensor in this case.
Right. So, is it a special tensor that somehow has non-zero components in every direction set up in some way?
No, it's an anti-symmetric tensor, and there is
so
a.
So, in principle, I could choose theta mu nu that was just x and t, and still I would get your answer.
How do you write down the theta mu nu that's Lorentz invariant?
Yeah, very simply. It can be written into as the product of block matrices, and there is a unique theta parameter. This is, of course, for the Euclidean signature. And so, if you want to have unitarity and other good features, you cannot have different thetas. So, in some sense, there is a there are no preferred directions. So that's the outcome.
But isn't this the same thing as an electric field in the x direction and the magnetic field in the z direction, which looks like
more
preferred
or less
directions?
F mu is more or less as a theta mu, if you want.
But so how is that Lorentz invariant? I mean, it's invariant under rotations in the top block.
No,
it's invariant under
the field
theory.
This is
the
this is a tensor, but the field theory on this background is Lorentz. It preserves the Lorentz symmetry. This is what I mean. This is a tensor, not a scalar.
Okay, so it takes this form in some preferred coordinate.
Yes, I employed the commoving coordinates.
And yet that preferred coordinates doesn't somehow translate into a preferred direction. This is confusing to me. Maybe I have to think about it.
And we could have done this.
Yes, okay.